Hey everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. With me, I have, as per usual, Mike Zeppel, the High Performance Coach for Victoria Metro. Welcome, Mike.
Robbie, excited to be back.
Very reliable, always at our sessions, always at our podcast. It's I don't think we've done a podcast without you. However, once again, the great man Justin Shuler.
Absent.
Not here.
Absent.
So, as is the rule with Talking Split podcasts, once you miss two podcasts, replaced. So we have searched far and wide for our replacement for this.
Who we got?
We've come up, I think we've gone pretty well with this.
Yeah, we have done well.
We've come up with Kai Porter, who is our work experience student for the week at Basketball Victoria. Kai, welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It is. It's great to have you here. You've brought a level of professionalism we haven't seen yet with this podcast.
More research, Robbie.
So much more research. Like, it's fantastic.
Speaking into the mic, Robbie, look at him.
This is what we've been lacking in our podcast all this time.
And been asking for it.
Well, we have
since
been.
Day dot.
We have been.
So, hey, where do you go to school, Kai?
Let everyone know. I'm currently at Upway High School right now.
Grade.
But, yeah, it's been good.
What grade are you in?
Year 10.
Year 10. And your homeroom teachers, who are they, please?
Matt Lucas and Bonnie Zudlin.
Very good.
Excellent.
Matt and Bonnie, we promise. Kai has been working. This is a part of his work week.
Once it's on a podcast, it can't be undone.
Absolutely. Yeah,
we know he's been doing work this week. We are at episode 28, though. Zep, this is usually your part of the show where you rattle off some famous 28s. What have you got for us this week?
I pre-warned everyone last week, Robbie, that number 28 might be a little skinny in the elite category. I have come up with a few names, though. Chris Lewis, early 1990s West Coast Eagle. Very, very good footballer. No, Robbie, got a blank face, doesn't know Chris Lewis. Gavin Krasiska, Collingwood Magpie, number 28. No, Robbie?
No.
Pretty good player, mid-90s. Paul Puopolo is a current-day Hawthorn Hawk, number 28. And it's probably internationally the best 28 I could find. Kai, you know Marshall Faulk?
Yep.
Running back for the St. Louis Rams back in Kai, you don't know who Marshall Faulk is. Get out of here. He's a Hall of Fame running back for the St. Louis Rams. Robbie?
You know what? He may not know, but he faked it well.
He did.
He did fake it. Ooh, hey.
I like him already. Like, he's going to fit in
just
fine.
My dad knows all this. He's into football.
Same as always, please do like, share, retweet, leave ratings, leave reviews on the iTunes store for the podcast as well. We really do appreciate it. Been a couple more go up during the week, which is fantastic. Justin is away. Still in Argentina. We'll start the music.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
So, played a couple of practice games so far. Played Puerto Rico, got a dub, straight up, beat them by 11 points.
The baby Carlos Arroyas.
I think you've done some research yourself here. Played against Canada, and lost by one. So
pretty good team, Canada.
They are a good little crew.
Number two team in the world for that age group.
So a pretty good thing. And like let's say, I mean, realistically, they're not going to show everything. Like neither team will show everything. They'll sort of hide a little bit for when they need to play each other during the tournament as well. But we are getting to that point. We are 2 days till tip-off. Maybe even less than 2 days now. I'll look back at it. I'm not quite sure on the time zones over in Argentina at the moment, but... Dominican Republic first up for Justin's crew.
Tough one. Opener, there'll be some nerves in that building for sure. Kai, as part of your research, mate, a couple of facts about the Dominican Republic for our audience, please.
Their official language of the Dominican Republic is Spanish, and peso is their currency.
Very good.
Not bad. What else you got, Kai?
Voting is not permitted to the members of the armed forces and national police.
Interesting. What else?
The Dominican Republic is the oldest European settlement in the Western Hemisphere.
And give us one more.
The Dominican Republic is the site of the first permanent European settlement in the Americas.
Very good. It is a old country.
It is.
And the capital city of the Dominican Republic, Robbie, you know this, of course, the geography guru, Santo Domingo. That is, in fact, the oldest city in the world.
It was on the tip of my tongue.
Take that back to Upway High School with you and just let everyone know those facts. And that's a part of your week of learning right there, as you're an expert in the Dominican Republic.
So the major export of Dominican Republic is coffee. So if nothing else, Justin will be able to bond with the Dominican Republic coaches over a coffee.
Over a, yeah. Well, how do you think they would have entertained the thought of a soy flat white? Do you think they roll with soy flat whites in
I
the
I feel
Dominican
like they would
Republic?
Have laughed him out of the building.
They might have done exactly that.
It's a very good chance. As you say, a lot of history, though, with the Dominican Republic and their basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there'd be some NBA dudes that would have come out of there. What do you got for us, Kai?
Yeah, there's been quite a few. There's been Charlie Villanueva.
Uh-huh. Rolled off the tongue. I like that.
Well done. Played his college basketball at Connecticut. Keep going.
We've had Karl Anthony Towns, currently playing for Minnesota.
Superstar.
Number one pick.
We got Al Horford from the Celtics. Boston Celtics.
Very good player.
And we got Francisco Garcia.
Good player. Played his last NBA team was where?
I don't know.
Come on,
where was it?
Just he was a Houston Rocket. Late in his career.
Is he a Houston?
I think he was a Houston Rocket. So he was a University Rocket. Of Louisville athlete in the mid-2000s.
Yep. Got to say, can't fault the research.
Done very well.
Like we've been asking Shula to get some of this stuff done for weeks.
Can't get it.
And can't get can't a thing. Get it. But can't Kai's get just it. Come in, swung for the fences,
document,
and gone whack.
Everything, Microsoft Word.
It's very nicely typed out as well. Again. Very impressed.
Done
so
very well.
This is 5 stars on the rating system for his work experience.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, so you'll get a good review.
No question. So obviously, best of luck to Justin in the next
exciting,
week or so.
Exciting
be
week.
Really
yeah.
cool.
Really exciting.
So I think it's Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and Turkey in their pool.
Mm-hmm.
So how's the tournament work, Mike?
16 teams. Yep. Four pools of four. Four fours are 16. Kai.
Yeah.
And you are you're playing for seeding. You want to finish near the top of your pool, so your crossover is hopefully not a Spain, not a Serbia, not a USA. So avoid those guys at all costs and play for seeding. So everyone makes that quarterfinal day, and then it's on.
We have got a guest. Like we have,
we've done well again.
We have. Robbie. This is a fairly good guest. I'm pretty
it's
happy.
Dangerous
with this one.
Though, Robbie. If our guests are too good, that means we've got to keep finding guests that are too
that's
good.
Not quite as easy, unfortunately. But really lucky to meet our guest over the course of the weekend. Was up at the Basketball Victoria Regional Conference up in Bendigo. Heaps of people turned up for it, which was fantastic. Really great reviews that came out of a lot of the associations. Really enjoyed their time there as well.
Yeah.
Was lucky enough to speak on a panel or MC a panel. With Tracy York,
mm-hmm.
so an assistant coach with the Adelaide 36ers yep. NBL team. Gabe Richards, Bendigo Spirit player.
Mm-hmm.
Belinda Snell,
yep.
Sydney player, and mm-hmm. also coaching their Siebel women's team at the moment. And their guest, Kelsey Griffin.
Awesome.
So they did a fantastic job up there, talking a lot about their pathways within the Basketball Victoria pathway, where they started, where they're going to, what they've experienced along the way, what it's like moving into coaching for a couple of them as well.
Yep.
So obviously Belinda's starting to get to that point where she's now beginning coaching. Tracy's been coaching for years. Yeah. I don't want to put a number on that because I always offend someone when I say how long they've been coaching for, so I'll just leave that be. But Tracy's been a wealth of experience in Adelaide,
yep.
As well with some of our Australian junior teams as well. It was great to hear them talk about it, and probably a little bit of a flow on from last week's podcast with Dr. Julia Walsh as well.
Yeah, which was that was really good and really well received. And thanks to everybody who have reached out to the pod and let us know to put them in contact with Julie in regard to the boomerangs and helping those athletes prepare for their event next year. So thank you very much to all of the listeners for that. It was a great follow-on from our discussions late last week.
Absolutely was, and it's really interesting. It's not until you talk to some of the ladies that have been around when you sort of hear their experiences coming through the pathway as well, and how it hasn't always been equal opportunity for female players and coaches in the pathway as well. So I think the more work we can do in that space of just making people aware that there are pathways for female athletes and coaches, the better the place will be.
Absolutely. So, and we woke up to the news this morning that Becky Hammond had been promoted at the San Antonio Spurs. I think we mentioned her name on the pod. I had that information last week. I had to keep it under wraps, Robbie.
You've done very well.
She had been promoted at the Spurs, so awesome job to her. And we spoke about how highly revered she is in NBA circles, both as an athlete when she was a really good player and now as a coach.
Absolutely. You've done well to keep that to yourself, Mike Woj Zeppel.
Thank you.
Very nicely done. So, as I mentioned, Kelsey Griffin coming onto the show, on the podcast. We'll have her coming up next. A lot of credentials with Kelsey. Two-time WNBL champion. Two-time Grand Final MVP, two-time All-Star, Defensive Player of the Year, as well as MVP for the Asia Cup with the Opals. So it's been in Bendigo for the last, say, half a dozen years or so, I think it was, and up in Canberra for the WNBL season there. Awesome. So she's preparing for an Opals tour coming up to China.
What does she want to do and hang out with us too, mate?
I think she felt sorry for us. We begged and pleaded and we said, look, you know, it's not fair for us to interview Kai for the next 40-odd minutes. Is there any chance she can give us a hand? And she was very graciously accepted.
Chop out. Awesome.
So we have got her at the end of her conditioning session up in Canberra at the moment, so she might be a little weary, but we'll see how we go with it.
Awesome.
Get started with Kelsey. All right, so we have our first guest that's called in. The technology has worked, which I'm forever grateful for. We are incredibly lucky to have with us Kelsey Griffin, currently with the Canberra Capitals and also the Australian Opals. Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
That's fantastic. So I met you a couple of years ago at a coaching course, but caught up with you again over the weekend as we had the panel for Basketball Victoria Country as well. Fantastic panel with yourself, Belinda Snell, Gabe Richards and Tracy York on there as well. And we might rehash a little bit of that for the listeners that weren't there, I suppose. But where did you first get started in basketball?
Yeah, my journey to basketball, I suppose, is probably like most kids, I would imagine. My parents wanted to keep me out of trouble, and they saw that I was an active kid, so they kind of enrolled me in any sport that they could. Being from Alaska, the winters are really long, so indoor sports are pretty popular. And then so I played a fair bit of soccer, and then my brother also played basketball, and so I basically wanted to be my big brother when I was little. And so when my parents enrolled me in basketball, I was really excited about it. But it was more just something I did in the off season for soccer, because I was set in my ways that I was going to be the next Mia Hamm, which might not mean a lot to a lot of people. And I date myself now when I reference her, because she was a gun soccer player when I was younger for USA. And then in about year seven, I was trying out for a competitive soccer team. And in the States, it's a bit different to Australia, because school sport is really big. And then association sport isn't as big. But when you're younger, there's more association sport. And I was trying out for a competitive, so not a recreational where everyone gets even playing time, but competitive soccer. And my coach just told me, he's like, you're not going to make the cut because you're not athletic enough. You're not quick enough. And at the time, I was devastated. But my parents saw an opportunity for me to play for a competitive team basketball-wise in Anchorage, which was about 15 minutes, or sorry, about half an hour probably from where we live. And so they, committed to, you know, driving me to trainings in Anchorage and started playing basketball competitively and never looked back, which is kind of funny when I tell my story, because I hear of some of the commitments country Victorian parents have as far as driving their kids, you know, 3 hours to get to training sessions. And I was like, I thought my parents did pretty well getting me half an hour to a training session.
When you don't drive, everything's a far way. Like, it's don't have Uber back at those. Like, I'm dating myself. Or we certainly didn't have Uber as well when I was a junior growing up.
Absolutely.
Hey, now, Kelsey, this is how this thing played out, right? So I got to the office Monday morning, and Robbie comes in. He was at the conference all weekend, and he was a big advocate for the conference. But he said Kelsey Griffin was unbelievable on the panel this weekend. And then I said, Robbie, get her on the podcast. So Robbie did a great job in getting you on the pod, and we're massively grateful. But I did a little bit of research now, Kelsey. Okay, you played your college ball at Nebraska. You averaged 20 points a game your season. Yeah, your senior season, which means that you would have put an awfully lot of hard work in between your high school and collegiate careers. Is that correct?
Yes, but it might not be how you think.
Go on.
You want me to go? Yeah. So, I was not a gym rat. I was that kid that coaches would say, go away and do the summer program, and I wouldn't even look at a basketball, which that might be really scary hearing on your podcast, and it might be a bit different than a lot of coaches think at the moment. And in hindsight, I wish I probably had put a bit more time into my sport, because becoming a pro would have been a lot easier. But at the time, having my summers off really served me well. And in saying that, though, when I practice, I practiced my ass off. So I was someone that would train the house down. So as soon as I stepped onto the court till I walked off the court, I'd given, I would say, consistently everything I could. You know, everyone has good training days and bad training days, but for the most part, when I was training super hard. But when I was away from basketball, I was away from basketball. But in saying that, my first 3 years, so my freshman, junior, and sophomore, or my freshman, sophomore, and junior year, I wasn't really committed to basketball. Basketball is probably more a means to an end kind of thing. I wasn't really enjoying it. I talked a bit on the panel about really taking everything my college coach said personally. Didn't really think that we saw eye to eye on things. I didn't think she understood me, got me, didn't appreciate how hard I worked. And so I would go away and I would have these summers off and come back probably a bit underdone, a bit out of shape, use most of the preseason to get back in shape and, you know, find my stride, but always usually had a pretty successful season. But the difference between my senior or my junior year and my senior year was I had to have two ankle surgeries. So I'd rolled my ankle, completely destroyed it. But what it did was it forced me to spend an entire summer at Nebraska rehabbing. And so I came into that season in the best shape that I had then, on court, doing more on court stuff than I ever had in the summer. And I think that's really what led to my success, as well as having a team that was, we had great leadership. We had a lot of, we had six seniors that year, but we also had our first real true point guard playing on the team. And let me tell you, getting to play with a great point guard makes all the difference in the world in basketball in my eyes. I know some coaches say, you know, there's no point guard breaks and just run and gun and all this. And I love playing with a great point guard. So there's several things that came into that year. I think my injury was a huge one. It was a blessing in disguise for sure. Having great teammates around me that really got it and accepted their roles and really, just embraced that season. And then also getting to play with a point guard were huge, huge kicks that made me able to have the success that I did, I'd say.
Yeah, sure. Hey, so do you think that injury kind of changed your mindset in preparation and how you treated your body and treated your career, so to speak?
Actually, you know what it did is it made, so I had to sit out, I had to redshirt a year. So I was, my senior year was supposed to be 2008 to 2009, but instead it ended up being 2009 to 2010. And so for that season, that 2008 to 2009, I had to sit on the sidelines. And so that was the first time that I really saw my coach coaching, that I wasn't being coached by her. And this is going to be funny saying this on a coaching podcast, but since I'm doing some coaching my own, I hope people don't take it personally. But I was like, I will never coach basketball because people who coach basketball are crazy in the head. Like, they're a bit psychotic. Like, coaches are just a bit psychotic.
This is true, Kelsey.
And so when I finally had time to sit and watch my coach and realize that she was pulling people up for the same mistake 3, 4, or 5 times, or someone would make a mistake and then my teammate would come and make that exact same mistake that she had just stopped practice for, I'm like, well, no wonder she's nuts. Like, no wonder she goes off and, you know, makes us run lines or tries to do something to get to for people to understand the importance of this, you know, jumping to the ball or, you know, boxing out or whatever it was, because people were making the same mistakes as each other. And so we weren't progressing through drills like we should. And I was like, I get that. That makes sense. Or the amount of time she had to coach effort where she had to say, you know, like put people on the line or, you know, stop practice because people weren't working hard enough. You know, like when I was in it, I couldn't see it because I knew I was working as hard as I could, or I was trying to do exactly what she was saying. And it was all about my relationship with her when I was playing. But when I stepped outside of it and realized from the sidelines how it was affecting everybody or how she had to coach everybody, then I was like, oh, no wonder. And so when I entered my senior year, I made a pledge that coach wasn't going to have to coach effort and she wasn't going to have to keep repeating herself. And so it kind of catapulted, I suppose, my vocal leadership, where I was going to start pulling my teammates up and I was going to set a better example. But I stopped taking things as personally. And so I think as much as anything, that mindset and really understanding my coach so much better really is what catapulted that season, as well as having the physical preparation, the great rehab, and being in better shape.
That's an incredible story straight away. How did you end up picking Nebraska?
Not as incredible of a story. And my coach, I actually have a really good relationship with my coach now. It took me a few years to really understand and appreciate everything she had done for me, because she was a a tough coach. She had really high expectations. But I was able to tell her the story about kind of 3 years after I graduated. And it basically was, I didn't know anything about conferences. I didn't know anything about the Final Four. I didn't know who were good teams. Like, I didn't even really know about UConn. So, like, I really had nothing going into that recruiting process. And I had a teammate in high school by the name of Courtney Waters, and her dad knew a fair bit about it. So he kind of helped align me with some teams to play AAU and went out and had some good tours. But Alaska, being in Alaska, we really only had like two tournaments we could compete in, and that was all coaches could see. And so it ended up happening that the only reason teams saw me was because they actually went to see the teams we were playing against. And then they ended up spotting me. And then when it came down to picking a team, I actually relied on the head coach at the time of the University of Alaska Anchorage, who was recruiting me highly, but it was a Division II school. And she knew that I could probably be successful elsewhere. But she said, you know, get your talent. The teams that I think you would be most successful at are Arizona State, Michigan State, and Nebraska. And so we just kind of trusted her blindly and hoped that she had my best interest in mind, because me and my parents didn't really know any better either. And so went on unofficial visits to all those schools and loved the coaching staff at Arizona State, but didn't get along with the team very well, because you kind of go and you meet the coaches, they show you around campus, and then you probably play a pickup game with the team and kind of get to know the team a little bit better. And then they basically just kind of show you what life would be like if you're there. But best case scenario, because there's no conditioning and all that kind of stuff. And then so went to Michigan State and loved the team. Team was awesome. But the coach who recruited me actually left the day before I got there on my visit. So the head coach wasn't really that invested in me. And so I didn't really click with her. And then I went to Nebraska, and I didn't like the team, and I didn't like the coach. And Nebraska was kind of like, oh, I think I can cross this one off my list. So I went back, and then I found out that Arizona State had given my scholarship away. So they were like, your grades are good, we'll give you an academic scholarship. And I was like, oh, I don't think so. Like, this probably isn't a good fit. And then it was down to Michigan State and Nebraska. But Nebraska was the only one that had offered me, because Michigan State was still hoping to get this other person to sign. And I'm really close with my family, and me and my mom and dad rarely ever fought through high school. And the whole picking what school to go to was really stressful. And I was dodging phone calls and not wanting to be responsible, and just wanted to enjoy the summer with my friends. And me and my mom got in this huge argument. And I was like, when I got the phone, I was like, I was crying, and I was like, screw it. Whoever calls next, that's where I'm going to commit to. And Nebraska called next, and that's why I committed there.
You are breaking my heart. I am a diehard Michigan State supporter, and I didn't know that then. That has killed me.
So actually, Coach P was the coach at the time, and she's had a couple conversations with my assistant coaches and said, you know, she wished she had made a different decision back then. But I'm really glad for obviously how it's worked out. I'm quite happy. But yeah, it was. I feel guilty saying that that's how I made my decision, when knowing the hours and handwritten letters that coaches put into players. But I also want to be honest with how I did it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So after Nebraska, drafted in the WNBA, was that a career goal for you from the start, or would that just sort of eventuate towards the end of your college career?
Yeah, so that was something I was completely shocked by. I basically wanted to quit playing basketball every year bar my senior year. So I really had this love-hate relationship with it. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in school either. And so I really struggled to pick my degree. And I was really kind of just trying to figure it out. And, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old until you're about 22, 23 when you graduate, it's kind of this time when you're starting to make decisions for yourself, but you also still really want your parents and your family to be proud of you. And so it's finding this balancing act between what you want to do versus what, you know, make your parents proud. And so for me, it was really tough whether I wanted to stay or go back home and play basketball at UAA, which was safe. And so I really struggled those first 3 years. And then I ended up deciding that I wanted to be pre-med. So I wanted to be a doctor, and that was what I was going to do with school. So I was pre-med, graduating from Nebraska, and I never planned on being as like, I guess, drafted or breaking school records or being in the, you know, top 10 categories. It was never something I set out to be. I just didn't like letting people down, and I didn't like getting yelled at. And so the system that my coach had me in made it so that it was basically a pressure cooker, which I was lucky enough to survive and become a great athlete from. And it wasn't something that was necessarily always enjoyable, but it catapulted me to quite a successful career. And so when I did get drafted and got drafted as high as I did, it was a massive, massive learning curve because I'd never even seen a WNBA game. So I didn't know. They were asking me who my WNBA idols were, who my favorite team was, and I couldn't have even listed, you know, more than three teams that probably played in the WNBA. And so for me, learning not only the level of play that's required in the WNBA, but the players who've come before me, the amount of talent that's in the league, the physicality, even just where I'm flying to and what teams or what cities have teams, it was huge. And the Nebraska system wasn't a professional system. I think Gino at UConn, not only does he make great basketball players, but he makes great professionals. You look at the success UConn players have in the league, and I think he knows how to train his players professionally. Whereas I think at Nebraska, the way we trained, it was for that 4-year finite period. And so for me, there was so much talent. So I talked about all those summers I had off. If I'd have known I was going to be a professional basketball player, there's a lot more work I would have put into my game. The amount of footwork, shooting, being versatile that I had to play catch up then once I was drafted, it was massive and quite stressful, to say the least.
I bet. Hey, that love-hate relationship with the game that you described, that's very interesting because what you felt through college, and I'm sure a little bit in high school too, that would be pretty prevalent with our 16, 17, 18-year-old boys and girls here in Australia, wouldn't it?
Definitely so. I think there's so much that is enjoyable about basketball and having, you know, some of your best mates that you play with and get to compete with and go on these great tours with. But then there's so much sacrifice, and it really is from a young age. But the general public don't see it a lot. Your parents probably understand it to be, or hopefully understand it to be sacrifice. But, you know, people think you're so lucky. Like, look what you get to do. Look what you get to be a part of. But there's so much of it that actually sacrificing, you know, getting to be a kid and getting to go around and enjoy your friends and hang out and do things because it's always kind of at a cost. And that seems a bit grim and a bit, but it's also kind of a reality of it. And not only that, there's a huge mental side that, an amount of mental energy that the side of things takes on. And whether you're at a really elite level or a younger level, you know, there's a lot of pressure to perform now, not only in the classroom, but on the court. And so that can also then affect and spill over into family and friend time as well. And so it's kind of this fine balancing act. And if you do have supportive family and friends, it makes it easier, but it's certainly not easy. But they understand a little bit more what you're going through and can support you through it. Whereas, you know, I hear some of the kids that do it on their own or commit to doing it and get themselves to training. And I just have the utmost respect for them because I was very lucky to have such supportive parents. And I definitely don't think I'd be where I am today if it wasn't for them. And my siblings, I think I had very understanding siblings. The amount of time my sister had to spend in gyms when she is not a sport person at all, I'm very lucky to have such great siblings.
Oh, that's awesome. So your WNBA career, so drafted by Minnesota and then traded to Connecticut from there. So that's a whirlwind of emotion straight away. But talk us through your WNBA career.
Draft day was a very interesting one because there had been talks that I'd get traded right away because Connecticut was trying to make this move. And I've met with Mike Tivo the night before the draft, or maybe it was at the USA camp I went to. I can't remember when I met with him, but he had asked me if I was interested in playing on at the three, you know, like, or did I need to just be a post player? And I said, look, I said, I'm happy to do whatever I need to do, but if I'm going to be playing on the perimeter, I'm going to need a lot of help because I haven't done it. Because even in college, my coach tried to play me at the three and just saw that I was a natural at the four. And even though I was undersized, I could hold my own. And so really hadn't spent much time on the perimeter. And I think probably you guys could attest to the college system kind of makes, you know, it's almost like a lock and key system. Like it doesn't make versatile players. You have a role that you're going to fit for those 4 years, and we're going to make you great at that role. That role can change a little bit, but for the most point, we're not going to make you super versatile players. Whereas Australia does a really good job of, you know, varying the skills across whatever height or size you are. So anyways, so I had this meeting. He's like, yep, okay. So I thought this might happen. So it did happen, which is exciting. I got drafted with Tina Charles, who is awesome. We had been up for a lot of the same awards my senior year. She got all of them and got drafted with a few other rookies, which was great. Daniel McRae and Alton Hightower. So there was a nice little contingency that we had going into camp, which was nice. But I was not ready. I had no idea or what I was going in for, because I had only played in a system that was about togetherness and about getting things done together. And the WNBA was such an eye-opening experience for me about looking after yourself, because what you did well meant more dollar signs and zeros over in Europe. And so for me, I had never been looked off of before, like come off a screen wide open and had a teammate look me off, or plays ran deliberately at me because I was a liability on defense, or teammates having to go at me in the locker room. All of these kind of things just would never have been tolerated in college. And for me, it was really a whole new experience that I wasn't prepared for. And so that was one side of things. And then the other side was I had to swing between a 3 and a 4. So I went from being quite comfy and happy to my block, maybe extend to the elbow, rarely shot threes lifestyle in college, to now having to guard Diana Taurasi, Penny Taylor, Angel McCautry out on the perimeter, or having to attack them at the three.
That doesn't sound hard at all.
No. And just like, and I had a 3-week training camp to figure out how to do it. And so and I'm a perfectionist. I'm a bit critical of myself. And so it was really something that I just felt like I was just treading water, just trying to keep my head above water for basically my entire rookie season, and not feeling prepared. Like I felt like no one told me what was about to happen, or even picking an agent. Like after I graduated from college, I was the first person to get drafted. And so basically my coach said, you know, we're proud of you, great job, and just handed me a file of all the agents who are interested in representing me. And I had no idea how to go about picking an agent and what that meant, or where to play overseas, who to trust. And so it was all just a massive, massive whirlwind that I really didn't feel prepared for. And I think that's part of the reason why I love mentoring and talking and sharing on panels, is because that wasn't something that was really given to me through my career. And so I wish I had had somebody that could have helped or prepared or let me know it was going to be okay at the time. And so, so that was my first WNBA season, and really, really struggled. And the struggle only started to get worse because I started to compare myself to other third overall picks. And I knew I wasn't up to scratch or wasn't doing what they were doing. And it just really got into a pretty, pretty dark, sad place. And being over in Europe's isolating as it is. And so I think that just made it worse, and kind of just got stuck in this place. Like I remember I'd call or Skype my mom, and I'd be like, it just feels like I'm just constantly running into a brick wall, Mom. Like no matter how hard I try, I just keep hitting this brick wall. Or playing basketball, like I feel like I can't even do a left-handed layup, like without doubting myself, or like it's just like petting a dog in the wrong direction. Like everything just feels wrong. And so it was really, really tough. And I was like, and it got to the point where I was like, why am I even doing this? I'm smart, I'm educated, I have other things I can do. And then I found Australia.
That's very lucky for us, obviously, for a start. But you told a great story on Sunday as well about your exit interview with the NBA after one of your seasons, or WNBA, sorry.
Yeah. So that was my third year. Yep. So that was my third year. And, I started my rookie year. I started most of the game. My second year I was averaging probably like 20 minutes. I was basically, a sub for Asia Jones, who is a great player, and I would sub for play some on the wing, but not Heath. And then by my third year, I found myself, you know, as the 11th, 12th man on the bench, and kind of accepted that role, but knew there was more I could give. I knew I could play at that level, and a lot of that came from sports, from the sport psych work I did, and was feeling like I was okay. I just needed to understand the coaches. Plan for me, like, did we see me in the same role, or were there things I needed to do? And so you have exit interviews after every season, and I remember that third year going in, and I'd never prepared for an exit interview before, and I prepared for that one because I really wanted to make sure that I got everything I needed out. And so I had my piece of paper, and I went in there and hadn't really even gotten that far into the interview, and he just said, you know, Kelsey, when it comes down to it, some people's 60% is better than your 100%. And it was the most crushing blow. Like, even just saying it and sharing it, like, I can feel it in my chest. I remember him saying that because I just knew there was nothing I could do. It was the most helpless feeling. It wasn't like, you know what, Kelsey, we see you're working hard, we need you to be better at this, this, and this, and you'll start earning minutes, or we'll reevaluate, or, you know, we need this from you. It was basically like he had given up on me. And I'd never experienced that in my career where a coach had, I mean, I suppose back when I was in year seven, but as a professional, knowing I could compete in the league because I had done it in some games, but just to have a coach say that was so defeating. Broke down. It was very, didn't get a whole lot else out of that interview after I heard that, but that was definitely I had one other real bad one in Connecticut, but that was, very tough.
That is, that's rough. That's rough. And to be able to go from that and then in one kind of motion, figure out what you're going to do next is really, really tough. And you're still early 20s right here too, huh?
Yeah. Yep. So I probably would have been, it was before I came to Australia. So it would have been 24, 25. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And there has been, we talk about that now. So you spent a little bit of time in Europe, Israel and Hungarian. My mum's Hungarian, Kelsey, but she's not a bastard.
Oh, okay.
She's only 5'3". Not a bastard. But then you found Australia, like Robbie said, lucky us, and you moved straight to the thriving metropolis of Bendigo.
While this was happening in the WNBA, I also had an agent that wasn't very supportive either, which I don't know. Agents are a whole nother topic, but my agent at the time told me he couldn't find me any jobs overseas because I was white. And so that was something too that was really difficult because there was nothing I could do about my skin color. And so there was nothing I could do, no stat line I could put up. So I had a coach telling me that my 100% is not as good as people's 60%. And I had my agent telling me I couldn't find a job because I was white. And so I was really pretty much just going to give up and not give up, I suppose move on. I really is how I should look at it. And, go back to med school. I'd saved up some money I could pay for med school. And that's kind of what I was thinking. But luckily, Chelsea Obrey, who I played with in college, and, you know, I talked about wanting to quit my freshman, sophomore and junior year. Chelsea Obrey is one of the best teammates I've ever had in my life. And she's the one who would help me out when I was going through those things or saying that Coach Ulrey didn't get me. She'd be like, no, she does. She just sees something in you. You know, she's trying to push you and get the most out of you, which at the time she was, but it took me until my senior year to see that. And lucky for me, Chelsea had come to Australia and was playing Siebel for Geelong and then got picked up and was playing WNBL for the Spirit. And Kathleen Shear had come out for the Spirit and had a bit of a bad knee when she came out, thought it was going to come good, but it didn't end up. And so the Spirit had to end up sending her home. So the Spirit were without an import, but it was really late in the season. Like, I think it was October already, or maybe August or September, sorry. And so Chelsea called me up and was like, hey, I don't know if you have a job, but you should come out to Australia. It's great. They speak English. The food's awesome. And we only train 3 times a week. And I was like, what? I was like, what do you
That's
mean?
That's right in your wheelhouse.
Doing two
right
a day. Yeah. I was like, I've been doing 2 days in Europe, you know, killing myself in the WNBA. I was like, this sounds like the perfect last hurrah before I get to, you know, go start school again. And it's the summertime. And I get to play with Chelsea again because she's an just an awesome human being. And so I was like, oh, I don't know. My agent's telling me that maybe I should gamble and enter the Korean draft, which I might not get picked up, but the money's better. It's what I should do as a professional because the Australian League isn't what I should do, a player of my caliber. And this is my agent was telling me this isn't how I feel. And so I was just like, oh, I don't really know. And so I called my mom. So anyone who's listening to this and thinks you won't need your mom when you're in your mid-20s, early 30s, you're dreaming because you'll always need your mom. And I called her and I said, Mom, I don't know what to do. And my mom's an awesome woman and she always gives me great advice, but it's never direct. She just answers my questions with questions like, how does that make you feel? What do you think about this? And for the first time in my life, I can remember my mom giving me a direct answer and saying, Kelsey, go to Australia. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to Australia. And so I was like, all right, Bendigo. I was like, never heard of Bendigo. I better get on the Google. Mm-hmm. So I jumped on Google and I was like, Bendigo. I was like, why would I go to Australia and be 2.5 hours from the beach? That doesn't make any sense at all. But I was like, you know what, stuff it. Last year, make it work. And I'm going to make the most out of each city that I visit. So that's how I ended up making the decision to come to Australia.
Awesome. So I guess you put on a platter to your mom, Australia or Korea, and she chose Australia. That didn't sound like a hard.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing experiences with your playing career, obviously. So there's a lot of people that stand out, and obviously your mom's a great role model in all of this as well, and the family plays a big part. But what were some of the people and the mannerisms and traits that stood out to you as good coaches that you've had over the years as well? What have you identified with?
I think one thing that I really wished I'd mentioned on the panel that I didn't get a chance to was coaches that role validate. So coaches that can come into a locker room and see that person that was up and about on the bench. No, they may not have got in, but say, hey, you know what? I saw you and that made a difference. And whether that's in front of the group, or whether that's after the game as they're walking, or even after training, walking to the cars or whatever, that a coach that recognizes the importance of 1 to 12 or 1 to 15, I think make the biggest difference as far as team chemistry. And that's something that I've tried to express to my coaches as I've gotten older and have a bit more of a, you know, leader or group leadership role, is that, you know, every single person matters. Like when you pick a team, like my hope is that you have a plan for each person on that team, and to let them know that and to be honest and open with that. And not that everyone has to accept and be happy, not that everyone has to be happy about their role, but if there can be some acceptance and understanding, roles can change and things can move. But I think that a coach appreciating that, however small that role is so important. Because that's that team environment and that team chemistry, is that everyone needs to be validated. And all it takes is a good job. And it doesn't have to be in front of the group. It doesn't have to be a big deal made, but just that simple tap on the shoulder. Hey, I saw you working really hard tonight. Great job. Absolutely. It makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, and I've seen it firsthand as well, Kelsey. Well, you'll see a coach the 12th player completely different to the first player. And that's really disrespectful to the 12th player and their efforts and commitment. And if they're in the game at the end of the game, then you should be coaching them to get better and, you know, challenge them the same way you would your best player or your second best player.
Yep. And I also think I think one of the biggest mistakes coaches can do is make an example out of their bench. The player that barely gets on and makes the one mistake, or in training, you know, the starters have done this so many times, and then the bench makes that one mistake and the coach loses their, goes off about it. It's so bad on so many levels and for so many reasons. A, that person's probably not going to be in the game. So that it probably doesn't need to be made an example of, but it's, Tracy talked about it and about Michaela Dompkins recognizing how fair she was. I think that coaching across all levels where everyone's treated equally is so important. I want to be pulled up. If I'm your star, your go-to, I want to be pulled up on my lack of effort or not crashing the boards or not saying whatever it is, not knowing scout, just as much as you would, you know, if not more, in all honesty, because when it comes down to it, you know, usually those are going to be the players that you need to have that mental sharpness, that mental focus, focusing games for sure. And I just think that's too often, even in the pros especially, too often that happens. And I just think that it's just doing everyone on the team a disservice.
So you're starting to get into coaching yourself now. You've done a little bit of work up in Bendigo with some of the schools up there as well. What do you enjoy about coaching from your end?
I think there's it was actually such a hard transition. I didn't think it would be as hard as it was. But to start to teach things that are kind of instinctual that I've just been doing for so long, it's just what you do. To be able to really break that skill down and teach it, I think it gave me a whole new respect for the game of basketball and really for my own game. But then also it made me need to start being more of a student of the game, which I had started to be as a pro, but really had to be as a coach. And so I think for me, when I get to work with young girls and boys and see them working hard at a skill or something new, and then that look on their face of that, like, you know, I've done it, that feeling of success that they get or that excitement about it, I think is really exciting. But also I really enjoy that mentoring role to help, you know, let kids know it's going to be okay if they miss out on a team or don't get a selection, that it's really going to be okay. It just might not have been your time right now, you know, or there's other opportunities. And so just to give that support and that guidance that I didn't always have throughout my career, I really think is one of my favorite things to do, as well as if there's anything I can help with skill-wise or anything that the kids want to know mentally or leadership-wise, I think it's just really nice to be able to give back because I didn't always have that growing up. And so I think for me, that's been something that's really been rewarding. Just in my short little bit of coaching that I've gotten to do.
Absolutely. And that's something we've spoken about often here, Kelsey, is just the position you have as the head coach or the lead coach. And it's the X's and O's of the X's and O's, but we do have a leadership void in the world, really. And the more young leaders that can come out and help nurture the next crop of young leaders, you know, we can never do with enough of them. Are you a long-term coach, Kelsey, or back to med school? You thought that far ahead?
I don't think I'll be going back to med school. I do think the human body is fascinating. Like, I think it's amazing the limits we can push it to and how we can be broken and get back together and the rehab side of things and all that. I just find absolutely fascinating, but I don't think that's really where I'm being drawn to in life at the moment. I'm really loving the leadership roles and the mentoring roles that have been kind of the pathways that have opened up for me and the opportunities that have opened up for me. So I'm actually pursuing a teaching degree to hopefully be able to get back into my school in Bendigo and be in I was a year 10 coordinator, and then they've changed the program. So you need to be a qualified teacher to be able to do it. So that's kind of my plan at the moment, is that I'd love to move back to Bendigo and really be a part of that program or any program really where I can help, especially country kids. I'm a bit biased. I really do like working with country kids to be able to, yeah, do some coaching and leadership and just that those skills, I think, are so important, because I look back at my college career and my coach was all about helping create better people than when they came into the program. So we had so many community service hours that we had to do in schools. We had to have a certain GPA, and then obviously if you want us to be successful on the court. And so I think those are things that I really appreciate that she instilled in me. And those are things that I would love to give back to Bendigo and Greater Victoria.
Well, the quicker you move back to Bendigo, the quicker we can steal you to come and help out at some of our camps, Kelsey.
Yeah, oh, I'd love that. That would be amazing.
I feel like we've only sort of scratched the surface, but we are sort of running out of time here. I really do appreciate you jumping on the podcast here. It's great to get a player's perspective, and you've hit on a lot of things that I really think will help our coaches that listen to the podcast and any players that listen to it as well. I think you're a great role model in not only female sport, but all sport, and players have got a lot out of this as well. And from our end, I did try and retire you somewhat early on Sunday by asking what was next after your playing career, and I do apologise for that, but we do wish you all the best with the Opals coming up as well, with your tour to China and World Champs and everything that goes like that.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm actually really glad you asked that question on Sunday, because I think that's something that Sandy's really helped me to understand. Sandy's first year in the WNBA was when she was 30, and so I think it's all a mindset and how well you invest in your body. And yes, it does look different in the later stages in your career, but I'm really excited about what I'm going to do in these next 3 years and see where it takes me. So it was not by any means, I didn't feel personally attacked by any means. I was really glad so I could answer that question, because I think too often
he offends all that time frame.
No, but thank you so much for having me, and I really loved it. If I can just share one more little thing, I really wanted to mention this on the weekend, and I completely forgot. Yeah. I don't know if Gino actually calls it the $100 bill test or not, but I thought he told a story that was really great, where he'd have one of his athletes run suicide or down and back, and he'd ask them afterwards, "Did you run that as hard as you could? Because I really wanted you to run it as hard as you could." And they go, "Yep." Usually they say, "Yep." And then he'd look to him and he'd say, "Okay, well, if you beat that time, I'll give you $100. And most of the time, the athlete could probably do it, beat their time. And so that's one thing that he talks about, is why would you train harder for that $100 bill than you would for yourself, and putting that importance on yourself. So being the best you can be because you're worth it, not because there's a reward on the end of it, a financial reward. Obviously, he couldn't give his players, that would be a massive NCAA breach, but it's the theory of the,
you know, is a subscriber to this podcast, and you've just done it.
But when he was explaining it, I was like, that is so true. And so I've started to use that in some of my coaching as well, especially with my young guys that I coach. When I say, "Oh, do you think you did that drill as hard as you could?" And usually it's, "Yep, of course." And then I say, "Well, if I was to put $50 on the line, could you do it even better?" And so it's really to kind of put it back on the student or the athlete to be able to reflect on it and say, you know, am I really doing this as hard as I can? And it's amazing when you start to put, you know, that whatever that reward is, chocolate bar, whatever it needs to be, and get that reflection from your athletes, the progress you can really have as far as, have we really gotten the most out of that session? And that was one thing I wish I had mentioned on the weekend, but I'm glad you guys gave me the opportunity to mention it today.
Hey, anytime we can help out with you getting your message out there is fantastic. It's I did identify a lot with taking the summers off. As we get older, we call that tapering. That's not having time. That's just so don't stress too much about that.
Terminology, I like it. Power of language, I like it. It's important.
It is. Kelsey, thank you so much for jumping in.
Awesome.
We really
job,
appreciate
Kelsey.
It. Good luck this season with the Caps, with Opals, and with your coaching yourself, and we hope to see you back down here really soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelsey. Okay, so we just finished up with Kelsey Griffin, superstar, in all honesty. Like, fantastic for her to jump on really short notice as well. We only asked her a couple of days ago to jump in, and couldn't be more receptive to it, which I thought was fantastic. Just the way she carries herself, the way she speaks, she's had some amazing life experiences as well. It's just a great message, I think, for a lot of our players and coaches out there of what they can make of the sport.
Awesome, Robbie. She's awesome. Did a great job. Interesting that she led off with that she maybe was not the typical gym rat, you know, in the gym all the time shooting around, which is interesting, but absolutely understand that from a player's perspective too. The $100 bill test.
Pretty good, isn't it?
Classic Gino. Really interesting. That's the whole debate of intrinsic versus extrinsic rewards for yourself. Like, how do you view work? How do you view rewards? I think that is really, really awesome. And then her talk around great coaches, role validation, how important is it for you to validate what everybody is bringing to your club, recognition of everybody, 1 through 15, how do you recognize the efforts of all those athletes that you're caring for, and then the last one, how dangerous it is to make an example of your bench, and how you coach the 10th players, how you got to coach the first player, and it messes with team culture and camaraderie if the 9th player gets in the game,
turns the ball over, and then that player just gets chewed out for it. So I thought she was awesome.
Absolutely. And the bit I love, and she says it a couple of times, she goes back to her mum for a lot of questions and a little bit of sort of, there's trust there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think as coaches we can build with our athletes as well. Like, you need them to trust you. I mean, Kelsey went back there obviously because it's family. It's really easy. But I love the fact that her mum asked questions with questions. She didn't just sit there and say, hey, here's the answer, here's the answer, here's the answer. Because as soon as you start doing that, your players aren't thinking anymore.
Right.
Like, and you do want your players to think. What you think is going to be good for them does not necessarily mean it's going to be good for them because they feel differently.
Right.
So I love the fact that questions with questions are great. And as coaches, I think it's a great way to teach. We do have to be a little careful at times that we don't, because eventually the player will sit there and go, do you actually know anything? Mm-hmm. Like, all you do is keep asking me questions. But I think it's a great path to lead them down. It's a great way to learn.
Absolutely. She was brilliant.
She was fantastic. And we said off air that she's offered to come back on any time, and it's a little bit of a dangerous offer to make, because that might be every Wednesday. We start getting on the phone to Kelsey saying, hey, any chance you can jump in again? She might be the replacement for Justin.
Well, that is a really good idea. Now we're talking, Robbie. Yeah. Now we are talking. But she's the first athlete that we've had on the pod, and it was just awesome to get an athlete's perspective on it, because she's born in 87, so the way she interacts with a 55-year-old coach is completely different to how she would have interacted with a coach when she was in college too. So all that perspective is something that you develop as an athlete over time, but as a coach you've also got to remember all the time, who are you coaching? Who are you coaching? Who are the cohorts of athletes that you're working with?
I think she was fantastic. So big thanks to Kelsey for jumping in, and hopefully we see her around a fair bit. Back in Bendigo would be nice.
Absolutely.
We'll see how we go from there. So this is our last pod for the term.
Season three.
A couple of things before we do wrap this up, though.
Robbie, I was up till 2 a.m. watching the soccer on Wednesday morning, early Wednesday morning. The Aussies bundled out. Morocco also bundled out, Robbie.
They did, but you know the good part about Morocco?
What?
Good chicken.
Yep.
Lowered expectations, because we're not just going to sit there and say, hey, we're going to roll Spain, but 2-2 draw with Spain. That's a pretty good result. And you know the best bit? Kick 2 goals.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, well, if you're going to stay up and watch that, you're at least going to get some entertainment value out of it.
Absolutely. And that's where I'm kind of getting to, Robbie, because disappointingly for us, no goals in gameplay across 3 World Cup games, 2 penalties scored, but nothing in gameplay. And I know out there in the media, there's a bit of talk around the excitement, like, where was the exciting brand of Aussie soccer or Aussie football? I don't know, Robbie. We've played last 4 games, we've scored a total of 4 goals. 2 of those from the penalty box, and 1 was an own goal. To me, that screams not much.
No, it's not exactly what you want to be remembered for. Do you do that research yourself?
No, I've got Kai on it, mate. Kai did a brilliant job this morning.
Good job, Kai.
Thank you.
We've got to get used to having a work experience kid with us, because that could mean we have to do far less work and we can just flick the research assignments over to Kai. But I completely agree. That's a really disappointing effort. In regard to, there's a lot of time and money invested in soccer.
Absolutely.
And I mean, we look at it, the World Cup bid to actually have Australia host the World Cup for soccer was around about $46 million.
In
2022,
right?
In 2022.
Yeah.
So you imagine that money invested into basketball.
Well, just in any sport. Like, okay, we're biased, basketball absolutely.
Biased. Yep.
But invest that money into development across any sport was interesting. Now, I understand we've got to put the bid in to get the bid to ultimately grow the game in the country. I understand that. But we're talking about a lot of money, and we're talking about making a difference in the community. Let's figure out how to invest some money, and not that money, into our sport too.
Absolutely right. So the comparison for obviously the Soccer World Cup is the Basketball World Cup, which, so around about this time next year, we'll have the Boomers on our home soil playing the US team.
Yep.
Will not use the term dream team, because unless there is Jordan, Bird and Johnson, it is not a dream team. It is simply Team USA.
Team USA, yeah.
Take us through the possible list of athletes we might have playing for us in that World Cup.
Robbie, this is our World Cup team for next year. There will be a Simmons on there, Robbie. You would think there's an Exum, a Dellavedova, a Maker. There's an Ingles,
Bogut's back in Australia. Then you've got some young fellas like Deng Adel, Goulding, still a really, really good pro. We're going to have a really good team.
Absolutely.
In 2018, whichever way you cut it. So here's to us and making a bid, talking split, making a bid that we play a really exciting, aggressive style of play at the 2019. I might have said 18 before too.
You did.
2019 Basketball World Cup, Kai. That's called a mistake, Kai. 2019 Basketball World Cup with our star-studded lineup.
Yeah. Would you go watch them play, Kai?
Yeah, I would. It would be exciting. It would be a good game. Absolutely. I would.
Robbie's got tickets for you.
I'll hook you up. I know people in low places that can get you something. So probably the other exciting news that's come out this week in basketball is the NBL teams touring and playing the NBA team. So 7 games announced.
Awesome.
Melbourne United playing twice against Philly and Toronto, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge for the sport. So I think it was on the back of, I think, the 3 teams that went across this year and played against the NBA teams and gave a reasonable showing of themselves. Like, United were not far away from rolling OKC.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like, you got to think, had Shula been on that trip?
Yeah. Could have been different.
But that is fantastic for the promotion of the sport. Because really, that gets us better imports out here. Mm-hmm. It gives our Australian kids a pathway to be seen by NBA clubs. Only good things can come from this.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, would you go watch that, Kai?
I would, yeah.
Robbie's got tickets for you too.
Yeah, right. I think Zeppel's got better ones. So by all means, blow up his phone when you're looking for extra stuff. But I think that's brilliant for the sport. And credit to those that have managed to get that done. Because that is a huge result, I think, for the sport in Australia.
It's just great for the marketability of the sport, for the young athletes, the young kids that are knocking around on a Friday night or a weekend in other states, for them to be able to see an NBA team on the floor with our NBL clubs is just awesome.
It'd be great if we could get it to a point where our WNBL teams play against WNBA teams as well. I mean, this can only be a starting point. This could grow and could be anything. So I think it's fantastic for the sport in general.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Kai, you got anything to finish up with today, mate?
No, everything's been covered, and I'm excited for the the NBL and the NBA teams facing off.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Awesome.
This is such a significant upgrade on Justin.
Yeah,
he's... Like, I cannot emphasise this enough. Like, he's come with research. Like, Kai's got, like, a full page of notes.
Yep.
He's produced for us. Like, it's just night and day.
It's going to be hard to get that chair back. That's all. He's going to have to work for the chair back.
I think so, too. Like, we may have to go out to Upway High School and podcast live from Kai's homeroom. See how that plays out.
Year 10.
As we are winding up, a massive thank you to all our listeners, all the people that interact with us on social media. It is fantastic fun to be able to talk basketball all the time. The interaction we get is brilliant. Like, we get emails in fairly regularly about, hey, can you talk a little bit more about what you had on episode 26 and things like that, which is brilliant from our end too. So we really do appreciate it. We appreciate everyone trying to grow the game as well. Like, it's, we understand this is a coaching podcast, but there are people from all walks of life that listen to this as well. But don't underestimate the value you all play in, one, making this podcast what it is, but also, two, growing the game. Like, it is something that's lost a lot, is that you might be that poor sucker domestic coach that couldn't get out of the way quick enough and ends up coaching. But you are impacting the lives of a lot of young athletes, and hopefully this is a little bit of a tool to help you do that, but also hopefully it grows the game with those athletes wanting to give back as well, which is a fantastic thing. So we do appreciate all the listens, the support, the ratings, the reviews. Doesn't mean you can't continue to like, share, retweet,
for sure,
rate again, leave a review again, leave it under a different surname, Kike Meppel or something like that, and we could potentially go with. Kai's going home to set up about 15 burner accounts where he's going to leave ratings and reviews for us, which would be fantastic.
That's
as well.
Friday. That's work experience Friday afternoon.
All right.
But we'd really do appreciate everyone's time as well.
So we'll be back late July with a review of 16s Nationals, review of the 17s Men's World Cup. The 17 women will be kind of just finishing their campaign off then too, so we'll be able to look in to how they've gone. And then we'll be back for the next season, term 3 of the school term, Kai. You going back to school in term 3?
Don't want to, but yeah, got to. I got it.
You will be, young man. And that's it, Robbie.
It is. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Good luck with your coaching, and thanks for talking split.